The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District or its employees. For more information about the sewer district and its projects and programs, visit neorsd.org. The Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District presents Clean Water Works, a podcast that explores water, sewer, and stormwater issues that affect you and your community. Learn about the people, projects, and programs that are protecting your health and the environment here in Cleveland and throughout Northeast Ohio.
Okay, your questions are way more deep than mine. Mine were like, how do you feel about throw pillows?
That's a good one.
Neutral? Anti? I'm kind of anti-throw pillow. What do you do with the throw pillow? Throw it on the ground. Like, that's what I do with them.
They're good for if you're taking a nap and you want something to clutch.
Couch nap.
But then some of them are not soft enough for that kind of thing.
No, they're like scratchy or weird.
Yeah. But the main problem with throw pillows is that there are too many of them.
I think like 5 or 6 came with our couch. And I was like, well, we don't... There's no room to sit on the couch with this many throw pillows. But anyway.
Brad, how do you pronounce your last name?
Rescola.
Rescola. It's a nice name. Thanks. Is that Italian? Italiano?
It's yes. I mean, if depending on who you talk to in my family, the ethnicity can change based on who informed them.
You're the only Bradshaw I've ever met. Is it a family name?
No. No, it's whatever my parents were doing in the 60s. They were fans of Terry Bradshaw in his college. And so, yeah, I'm a Steeler fan.
Okay.
And by the way, I grew up in Iowa. And the Steelers actually got their colors from the University of Iowa Hawkeyes. That's where they got their black and gold.
We are learning a lot today.
I mean, we could just do this all day.
Let's talk about risk. Internal audit is concerned with all the different types of risk that the sewer district is potentially exposed to.
Well, and I don't know that it's audit's going to count as interesting.
It doesn't sound interesting.
We'll make it interesting. But I thought, one of the things, that drives what we do is risk. And so how do you identify risk? How do you capture risk? And then once you identify your risk, what do you do with it? So there's a few ways you can manage risk. You can accept it and try to reduce it as much as possible. You can transfer it, give it to an insurance company, or pay somebody else to do. And there's financial risks. Everybody knows about that. And there's operational risks, an industrial accident. There's reputational risk. You don't want people doing things that are going to reflect poorly on the organization and, cause a public outcry. Look at FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried. He bilked $26 billion out of people. And then when you hear the lack of regulatory oversight and you see the people coming in, for example, the guy who is managing FTX right now, he did cleanup for Enron.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people's retirement accounts. This is people's life savings.
So FTX most likely did not have an internal audit function.
No, they didn't have. They were approving invoices via a chat app.
Yeah.
Those types of things, those frauds, the Bernie Madoffs, the Enrons. I mean, even where there are sufficient controls in place, bad things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you identify those risks, you do your best to control those risks, and then you follow up on those risks. And you follow up on them just by asking questions on an annual basis. How do you manage access to systems? How do you manage access to physical sites? There's a risk universe. And so
what?
That risk
universe.
So you have a risk universe, and so that's one of the audit's responsibilities is to document and not only what you know, but you need to sit down sometimes and think about what you don't know. So you'll go through a SWOT analysis, which is the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and those are both internal and external. And
you're brainstorming all worst case scenarios.
You do, but that's where you need to rely on managers too, because they control their functional area. They direct the activities that go on within that area, and they're responsible if something goes wrong. One of the things that I've noticed coming from private industry, my background is in manufacturing audits, industrial audits, chemical plants. I've been a bank officer, so I've done those financial audits as well. Those have regulatory oversight. So if you're a bank, you have the comptroller of the currency, mm-hmm. their office comes in, you have the Fed that comes in and audit. I mean, you basically have to designate 10% of your office space for regulators that are going to come in and be in there all the time, mm-hmm. looking at what you're doing all the time. In private industry, or you know, there is a hammer, and that hammer is government. So they can come in, and if you're doing things poorly in your functional area, and they come in and they start issuing findings and recommendations and matters requiring attention letters, you're going to fix those, and you're going to fix those right now, or you're not going to have a job, and you might just lose your bonus for getting one in some cases. Mm-hmm. So they take it very seriously. In the government or quasi-governmental world, it's not that regimented. They're not subject to those. Okay. So one of the things that really is attractive as an auditor coming in here is your audit function is only as good as you make it. And so you have an ability if you're able to obtain the buy-in of management. That's mm-hmm. that's one of the skills you have to have. You have to earn their trust. You have to earn their respect. If we see something wrong, we're not going to sit behind the scenes and draft it up and make you look as bad as possible. We're going to let you know right away, hey, we found this, because first of all, we want to make sure what we found is correct.
Right.
And nobody's going to know that better than you. And then from there, then you work with management. What's the best way to approach this, to remediate it? And then we follow up on those activities to make sure that they follow through on their commitments.
I could see there being like some tension there depending on your approach, right? Because like you're not the bad guy. You work for the same company as us. But also like you are the one like kind of looking for errors or looking for like missing things. Mm-hmm. And so I could see that being really intimidating.
And what are the kinds of risks? Well, what kind of risk are we looking at with the sewer district?
Well, obviously there's regulatory and compliance risks. So there's EPA regulations that we follow. Testing standards, water quality, industrial surveillance, those types of things. Our financial risks, obviously, the worst thing for any organization, and ours included, is if there's a material misstatement on our financial statements and we have to go back and restate. You never want to be there. Operational risk, again, people not doing work in the prescribed manner, following protocols, standard operating procedures, those types of things. And then obviously blanketing all of those is fraud. So mm-hmm. you want to make sure that within the organization, within the function, within the activity, that you have that properly controlled, there's adequate segregation of duties, that the same person who's taking cash from somebody isn't writing the cash down in a book and making that cash deposit. Mm-hmm. If you're seeing that as an auditor, that's a big red flag.
That's a bad practice.
Yeah, you just want to make sure that you are managing those risks, and because all of them have the ability, if their significance is such, to cause reputational harm. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do, is we look at what we do. And there's a lot to look at. I mean, if you look at, plant operations, how are we managing workflows, and how are we managing the equipment that they mm-hmm. use? Is it safeguarded from the elements? We have billions of dollars in projects, construction projects, the tunnels that we build, the infrastructure that we maintain. And so a lot of that requires construction. And if you look back through the history of, where frauds happen, you're going to look at that construction. And mm-hmm. There's a lot of, from contracting to change orders, to work orders, to equipment that's purchased, what's done with that equipment when you're done with the job. So you just need to make sure that that stuff is adequately controlled.
What characteristics make a good auditor?
The best auditors are the ones that know how to ask the right questions. Mm. And
they're like an investigator.
They are an investigator. One of the things that it's kind of a catchphrase that they throw around is a root cause analysis. If things go wrong, why did it go wrong? What mm-hmm. what broke down? It's kind of the same thing, when you have an auditor that's in asking questions and that something doesn't smell right or something doesn't seem right. A diligent auditor will ask more questions, will dig deeper. And you have to be a little bit tenacious, but at the same time, you have to have the soft skills to not be offensive. You know what I mean? You need to keep them engaged and wanting to. And I hate to say it, but some of the best auditors I've been are just snoopy people.
And innately curious.
That's a very diplomatic way to put it. Far better than I put it. Snoopy. But I like Snoopy. Snoopy, everybody understands. The largest audit finding I've ever had was close to $6 million at a former employer. It was a routine audit. It was an audit that's done on an annual basis for medical claims and medical insurance. So mm-hmm. what could go wrong? It's looked at by external auditors and internal auditors. Yeah. One of the things they call audits when you do them yearly, you'll have an audit program that was done last year or the year before, or maybe then the last 10 years. They call them SALI audits, same as last year. Mm-hmm. And so when I got there, and so I don't like SALI audits. I like, even if you're tweaking it just a little bit, yeah. if you're changing it, why look at the same stuff the same way? Mm-hmm. So in this medical benefits review, as we're going through, I was like, how do we know that the company's getting the payments from the employees that's being withheld on their paycheck? Or can we just run a simple query and make sure that everybody's paying? Because there was no exemptions. Everybody had to pay their health insurance. So we ran this query, and it came up like 1.9 million off was the number.
But if you missed it all the other years.
We did it again, and then it came up like $7 million. And I was like, we need to go to see payroll. We need to make sure that this is actually it. And so in this case, it came back to going back through microfiche records, going back to like the late 80s. Mm-hmm.
So this was money that was supposedly coming out of people's paychecks
to cover their health insurance premiums.
But it wasn't
being drafted at all. It wasn't being taken from their paycheck at all.
So free healthcare.
$6 million. Okay. So yeah, it was $6 million. And I went into that HR director's office. That was the only time I've ever been verbally abused and asked to leave the office. There's no way what you're telling me is to get out of my office. I'm not having this.
They just didn't believe you.
No, it was the HR director. After they had gone through and validated the findings and put together a remediation plan, and the remediation plan came down from the CEO of the organization, we will recover these funds.
So employees who thought they were paying into the system and had gotten health care now.
Retirees on pensions
who now had to pay this money back.
I feel like that's kind of rude.
I feel like there's, you know what? That's not my call. You know, my role as an auditor is if you find something like that, I have a responsibility and a professional duty to report it. And then what management chooses to do at that point going forward. And you're right. I think that there was one employee who had been an employee since 1981, and he owed $87,000.
Oh my!
And they gave him a five year plan to pay it.
I would just move to somewhere far, far away. That's how you get out of paying.
Yeah, you leave the country, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not gonna lie; it shocked me too. I'll just never forget standing in the cafeteria at the salad bar making my salad and hearing that's the auditor right there.
Ouch. Going, man, wow.
Somebody's going to clunk me in the head.
Well, lucky for you, we don't have a cafeteria.
So there's two of us in our internal or our risk and assurance function that have a CIA designation, and we have one who's a CFE, which is a certified fraud examiner.
Oh.
And so they have a lot more value. Obviously, banks are very interested in that skill set, both internally and externally, and how they look at how they communicate and manage their external relationships with customers. But, you know, and then that gets back into regulatory risk. You know, banks are, you know, if you take out more than $10,000 as a report on you, if you're doing things, you know, where you're coming in and you're depositing large sums of cash, or you're taking out large sums of cash, or you're transferring periodically large sums of cash, it's called a suspicious activity report or a SAR, your bank's going to file those with the government saying people are doing something. Uh-huh. And that came about after obviously 9/11 and wanting to be able to follow money more closely. The old school auditing, you'd go in, you'd say, hey, we want you to look at accounts payable, accounts receivable, whatever. You kind of go over their activities, understand what they did, what their role, who the key personnel were, what are the key activities. You would document that. Sometimes there's things we want to look at as an audit department. And then sometimes the manager will say, hey, you know, are we doing this okay over here? Could we be doing it better? So you put together an audit plan. And then from there, you develop your field work. So you'll do walkthroughs. You'll go out. You'll interview the people for a process. You can go through and say, you know, I'm a widget. I didn't exist yesterday, but I exist today. Show me the process from beginning to end. Mm. And then from that, you'll go through, you'll identify the risks within the, and test attributes for the processes that they have in place, and you'll determine what's, you know, if I'm testing this, what's a successful test and what's a failure. Sometimes the failure starts with the policy and procedure because it's inadequate or it doesn't reflect current activities at all. And so the way you have your stuff communicated and set up doesn't reflect what you're telling me.
Yeah.
So you just want to make those things align. And then at the end of that, if there's findings, there's a couple of different findings you'll have. You'll have an observation, which is, you know, we didn't find a failure that caused a problem, but it could potentially, and maybe the potentially is why hasn't it caused a problem? Well, maybe this person knows what they're doing, or they're paying attention to that, mm-hmm. or they're aware of that. And so it hasn't been a problem.
If they weren't here.
Right. But if somebody else came in and they weren't paying attention to that, or they didn't know, have that knowledge base about whatever, it could be a real problem. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have an observation and they'll respond to that. Management will respond, yeah, we agree, and this is what we'll do to fix it. Or they'll say, you know, we agree, and so what? Then in addition to that, we'll bring in external subject matter experts. Mm-hmm. You know, there are just certain things, you know, like that are setting up our NIST framework right now, which is cybersecurity. So I'm not going to pretend that I have that knowledge base. And so that's another important attribute to an auditor is being able to say, I don't know. If you don't know, and bringing in people who do know. So once we go through and we do our testing and we summarize it, we share that report obviously with the client, and that's their opportunity to respond, you know. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we're wrong, or sometimes we say things that could be more accurately stated. Mm-hmm. And so again, it's not adversarial. You know, we find things, we want to work with them, make sure we understand it, and make sure that there's a plan in place to fix it and correct it. One of the things that you can't control against, I mean, you can put in processes and procedures and adequate segregation of duties. You can't control against collusion and fraud. Mm-hmm. That's why fraud has no threshold for tolerance. You don't tolerate it at all. So we're always, in everything we do, we're looking at the areas where theft, fraud, misappropriation of assets, where those things could take place, and making sure that in whatever testing approach we develop, that those elements are included. I was at a training event, and the guy was the FBI agent standing there, and he goes, we were talking about communications and secure communications. And he asked everybody, he's like, pull out your phone. Everybody who has full bars, raise your hand. So everybody raised their hand. He had this little box in his hand. He clicks a button and he goes, how many bars do you have now? I had no service. No. He goes, 10 bucks from China. And he goes, I've got to turn this off because I just knocked the full three floors above us, have no communications right now. So if you were caught with that, if they happen to catch you with that, you're going to FCC, you're going to get some major prison time. If you want to break into a building and they have security that's Wi-Fi enabled, and you click that off, you can disrupt their signal. Mm-hmm. People have a false sense of security. I mean, we all have our phones, and we can map anything we want anytime we want, but that phone is a tracking device. Mm-hmm. That phone, you have your phone on you?
Yes, I have mine.
Take it out.
Okay. Are you going to press a little button in my
Act like you're going to make a phone call.
Beep, boop, boop.
Go to where you make a phone call.
Okay.
And I want you to dial. Okay. I want you to dial star.
I'm scared.
Hashtag.
What's happening?
06. Hashtag. You see the IMEI number?
Oh, yeah.
You know what that is?
Probably something important.
That's your FCC profile.
Oh.
That pings.
FCC profile?
Yes, she does. I mean, everybody who goes in and applies for a cell phone through AT&T, Verizon, matters not. That numbers you, knows your social security number, knows how you pay for your phone, knows where you live. That pings every 3 seconds. Your IMEI data pings, and it's accurate within 3 feet. So the bank robber that goes in and hands the note to the teller and says, give me a bag of money,
right,
runs out, gets into a car that's stolen, gets in the car, goes to a mall, to an underground parking garage, gets out of the car, takes his bag of money, throws it into a duffel bag, changes clothes, walks through the mall, maybe goes shop for an hour, gets a cab, goes home, and gets home, and the FBI is standing there waiting for him because
he forgot that he had his phone on
him. His phone on him, so he's pinging it the whole time.
Yeah. All right, well, noted.
So I'm sorry. Why are we talking? I mean, this is fascinating, but why are we? What does this relate to?
Fraud. So you have a major event. You have a criminal event or some theft of something significant or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can obtain that data. The law enforcement can obtain that data. They can see who's standing there, at what time they're standing there, and where you went and where you've been. So they can get those. They can get that those pings readily. And everybody has them, and everybody carries their phone around with them. Mm-hmm. It's a tracking device.
The sewer district oversees massive construction projects, tunnel projects, multi-million dollar.
Billion
dollar outlays of funds. What are some of the risks that you would say, oh, this is not a good idea? What would be a red flag for some of those big ticket items?
So you look at the contract form to make sure that based on the type of project that it is, does a time and materials contract make sense more than a lump sum contract? A lot of times too, we have very specific requirements. So we can't just have concrete. We have to have a very specific concrete, a concrete that's going to withstand time, the element, pressure, large volumes of water, so the structural integrity of what we build has to be such that it meets with engineering requirements. So how do you know you're getting the right concrete? Well, for contracts like construction projects, you'll have a testing and inspection group. So you pay guys that will come out and they will literally drill a core of the concrete out, or they will literally be standing there when the cement truck pulls up and they'll look to see when that truck was filled, because if it's been in there less than an hour and a half, it's good to go. If it's been longer than that, or the temperature has exceeded the threshold requirements, they're going to reject it and say, we can't use it. Mm-hmm. So, we put rebar in what we build. Our rebar needs to be green treated so that it doesn't rust and corrode and dissolve mm-hmm. under the elements. So if you go out there and the rebar is laying out there and it's not green, and it's supposed to be green. You're wanting to make sure that you have construction managers and construction supervisors that understand the project and that they're qualified for the positions that they hold. So when you go out, a lot of times that's what you'll ask is, how long have you been doing this? And
a lot of specialized knowledge that right. that your department's taking into account or having to consult with.
Right. And that is exactly why we use external consultants for some of our work. So the guy who comes in and assists us with our construction audits has been doing this for decades. And he's very good, not just at, looking at work orders and change orders and understanding how those things move through a project, but looking at the financial calculations behind unemployment taxes that we're paying to these contractors, and that they're meeting their requirements, their financial requirements, that they're properly bonded, those types of things. Mm-hmm. So if something, goes wrong during a construction project and there's a collapse or something catastrophic happens where people are injured, who's responsible? Is it the district or is it the contractor? Mm-hmm. You just have to make sure that those risks that are inherent with a project are adequately managed so that, again, it doesn't cause us financial problems or worse, reputational problems. I think reputational problems are, a big concern for us, because we're working with ratepayer money and we want to make sure we're doing the right thing with it and that we're spending their money wisely, and that we're getting the value for what we pay for, particularly in our projects, because we want the life of those projects to be as long as possible. Mm-hmm. You're looking at payroll. Well, you know what payroll is going to be generally. Well, you can go out and look at certain attributes of payroll. Does the number change? Does the number change match our current employee roster? Make sure you don't have ghost employees or wide variances in what the payroll number would be on a biweekly basis. There shouldn't be much of a variance other than new people coming on. The district has like a little over $3 billion in fixed assets. I mean, a lot of that stuff is, infrastructure or whatnot, but a lot of the smaller things like vehicles, lawn equipment, lifts, tools, things that, when they put it on the books, it's expected that it's here. Mm-hmm. That just comes back to sound management. How do you manage fixed assets? Do you have a robust policy and procedure? And if you do, are you following it? And if you don't, you need to develop that. We're here to protect the organization and to make sure that we're operating more efficiently, and that those areas where risks aren't managed are addressed and corrected.
There's a lot going on in the audit department.
It's always interesting. I'm never doing the same thing. I'm not tied to a desk. I get to work with not just great people in my department, but I get to work with everybody in an organization. And so just having that exposure.
Yeah, that is really cool.
People say, when I say I'm an auditor, they're like, oh, you're an accountant. I'm like, no. I'm not an accountant, and that's on purpose. I don't want to be an accountant.
Why don't you want to be?
We're getting into stigmas now.
It's just the tedium of accountancy.
Okay.
I just, it's great if you want to sit at a desk.
Do you have an accounting background?
No, I have an MBA from Ohio Dominican University. And then I did that while working. I worked for BMW North America for about a decade. And so I love performance cars and BMWs in particular. After that, I got to spend some time with Goodyear at their corporate offices as an auditor for about 5 years. And then after that, a bank officer. And then I was recruited to come to the district.
Okay.
And yeah, got an email, which, and it said, join the sewer district. And I was looking, I was like, oh my gosh, that sounds glamorous. And
well, did you know that you'd be broadcasting to the World Wide Web?
Human Resources called me and kept me on the phone for an hour telling me what they were looking for and how my skills lined up and, you know, all the benefits and rewards that come with, you know, work-life balance. And again, that's one of the things that auditors struggle with is that work-life balance. If you work for one of the big auditing firms, this time of year, you're going to be doing full-fledged SOX and financial close audits, and you're going to be working 60 to 80 hours a week, and you're going to be not home. You're going to be flying around, visiting clients where the clients are. That's a tremendous value to me. I have kids. I love spending time with my kids. But you got to be good at it. You have to have some relevant work history, and you have to maintain your certification. You have to do 40 hours of continuing education a year and be competent at it and be able to articulate when you're talking to people, you know, the things they want to hear.
Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I learned a lot.
I had no idea.
No.
Did you know eligible customers can save up to 40% on their sewer charges? Learn more about the sewer district's cost-saving programs and use our discount calculator at neorsd.org/save or call 216-881-8247. That's neorsd.org/save or 216-881-8247.
Clean Water Works is produced by the Communications and Community Relations Department at the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. Our music was composed and performed by G.S. Schrey. If you have a question or suggestion, or if you'd like to learn more about the Regional Sewer District, visit neorsd.org or call 216-881-8247.